5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs a radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
We have officially reached double digits. Greetings, my friends, and welcome to the 10th installment of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I'm Jason Barrett, here to lead you on this sports media excursion. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome to the show a good industry friend and someone I've had the benefit of working with during the course of my career. That would be Sean Salisbury. Now, many of you are familiar with Sean from his time on ESPN. Others may know him for his work in Houston and across the country on SB Nation Radio. A couple of you will remember him for his college or NFL career, and a select few of you may remember him for his Oscar-worthy performances in such films as Benchwarmers and The Longest Yard. You know, when I think of The Longest Yard and the memorable moments from that film, I have to immediately think back to that incredible scene on the golf course where Sean asks Paul Crewe to take a photograph. I mean, that was legendary acting work. I'm sure Denzel Washington, Morgan Freeman, Will Smith, Al Pacino, Robert De Niro were all taking notes. Simply masterful work done by one Sean Salisbury. Obviously, I'm joking and busting his balls, and we'll get into some of his film work later on in the podcast. On an unrelated note, I received an Amazon Echo last month as a birthday gift. The early impressions so far have been excellent. I don't know if you guys have it or not, but if you don't, I'd encourage you to get it. Great sound quality, an ability to access sports radio brands within a matter of seconds. The technology is fascinating, especially when you look at where the future of the audio business could be headed. That said, the one thing that immediately stood out to me is that your brand recall needs to be strong. If the audience doesn't know your brand or your identity is too complicated, that'll hurt you down the line. A device like this can be incredible, but it only works if people know what to ask for. That'll be a topic I'll explore in a future column for sure. A quick reminder, leave a podcast review for us on iTunes. You can also listen to the show on Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Wherever you enjoy the show, be sure to tell a friend or two or 10,000. We greatly appreciate it. Now that we've tackled those issues, let's turn our attention to this week's starting point.
Quiet on the set. Can we please have quiet on the set?
Action!
The answer is Jay Cutler.
I wouldn't believe in Jay Cutler to do anything other than take out the garbage.
The MVP of the Cavs is this guy, Kyrie Irving. That's what
we
it is. No more MVP talk.
We saw what LeBron with the Cavs were without Kyrie. They went to the finals. The Cavaliers with Kyrie got back-to-back years of overall number one draft picks.
For the past 5 years, sports fans have been encouraged to embrace debate. If the programs that have adopted that moniker, though, were judged by the feedback they've received from the public, the slogan would be changed to debate disgrace. But are people really bothered by these opinion-driven programs as much as they say they are? Whether it's word of mouth, a survey, social media reaction, shows like First Take, Undisputed, Around the Horn, and Speak for Yourself clearly strike a nerve. Viewers often have very negative opinions on the programming and can't wait to let you know why. But are they really watching these shows, or just a couple of minutes of television or clips on social media and then creating a mountain out of a molehill? If you look squarely at the ratings, I'll use Friday, April 7th as an example. First Take was watched by 211,000 viewers. Undisputed on FS1 that same day had 146,000. That's less than 400,000 people watching the two shows combined, yet both seem to influence how sports fans feel about the remainder of ESPN and FS1 shows. Keep in mind, these shows are airing when most people are at work. That makes it harder to reach a mass audience. While sports television may look to Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless to play the role of Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly on Fox News, they're on the air during daytime programming, not during prime time, when millions of people are home on their couch watching television. What both of these networks and shows have in common is that they're led by outspoken personalities who cut through the clutter and set the tone for many sports conversations. I'm often puzzled by the intensity of the reaction to these shows because, one, the audiences aren't large, and two, each cast of personalities is doing exactly what they're supposed to do. They feature high-profile personalities who deliver topical content, and they deliver strong opinions which move people. I realize some fans feel that the hot take nature is manufactured and the authenticity of the commentators isn't genuine. Those are fair issues to raise. I'm not disputing that. But the fervor that exists for First Take and Undisputed is much stronger than we see aimed at shows like Pardon the Interruption. Yet Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon deliver opinions too. They rotate topics. At times their show can feel a little bit forced. But we seem to respect them in their show more than we do Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, Skip Bayless, and Shannon Sharp. Jason Whitlock, Jason McIntyre, Bomani Jones, Dan Le Batard, and the Around the Horn cast, they draw a negative reaction too, but nothing like those two main shows. On one hand, sports fans demand personalities to be vocal, authentic, and express how they feel. Yet when these two shows do that, they supposedly piss off the audience to the point of not wanting to watch other shows on their respective networks. But is their approach any different than what sports talk radio is doing daily? Hosts get on the air, they present topics, features, interact with audiences, welcome guests, and the program revolves around their individual opinions. In New York, for example, Mike Francesa is seen as the local market's voice of record, yet he misses on things all the time. Just go back a few weeks ago to his giant miss on Sergio Garcia's chances at the Masters. And when his opinion misses the mark, rarely are you going to hear the sports pope say, "Yep, I screwed up. That's my bad. I missed. Clearly it's my fault." Instead, he's going to make excuses for why things didn't go according to plan. But despite that, listeners don't all of a sudden stop listening to WFAN or advocate a boycott of the radio station's programs. They simply chalk it up as a case of Mike being Mike, and they come back the next day. And so that makes me wonder, is our anger towards the embrace debate culture in shows such as First Take and Undisputed real or as manufactured as we suggest their programming is? Are we reacting with an informed opinion on what we actually watched or overreacting to a small portion of content? Is it a case of not agreeing with one's opinion, wanting our voice to be heard and claiming to be more upset than we actually are? We all like being included in social media conversation, yet for all of its positives, it can also serve as a melting pot of negativity. When a subject generates reaction, we pile on despite having limited information to work with. And I'm not saying there aren't people with legitimate disdain for these shows. For example, I know Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated can't stand them. Many of you listening right now probably feel the same way. But I also don't believe our exposure to these shows is as strong as we say they are, nor do I think the content they're producing is causing us to tune out other network shows because of it. Maybe I'm crazy and I'm missing the boat, and I'm counting on you guys to let me know if I am. You can reach me on Twitter at SportsRadioPD or on email, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. Speaking of sports television, it's now time to dive into this week's sports media conversation, and it takes place with someone who's had a lot of experience in front of the camera as well as behind the microphone. That would be my industry friend and former colleague, Sean Salisbury of SB Nation Radio and ESPN Houston. Now, Sean's story is well documented. He's experienced the highs and lows of this industry thanks to a 12-year run at ESPN. During our chat, we explored many of those issues and dove a little bit into his current situation in Houston, where he recently added a national television simulcast of his radio program on BN Sports. When you guys get a chance, look for it on your local channel guide, tune in the show, and let Sean know what you think of it. This is an interview I've been looking forward to conducting for quite some time because I think Sean's got an incredible story to share. So without further ado, here's my chat with the one and only Sean Salisbury.
And now, our feature presentation.
Well, we're going to dive into the national show on SB Nation Radio and your TV simulcast in just a minute. But I want to start, Sean, by going back to the beginning because you went from the field into this business, and that's not a smooth transition for everyone. You, on the other hand, have had a hell of a lot of success doing it. Take me back to the beginning, where you were, where you started, and how you knew that this would be a right fit for you.
JB, when I first went to college, I actually went to school to play football to go to dental school. I'd always wanted to be a dentist and a children's dentist growing up. And then I was talking to my dad, who's my hero, who passed away, and we were talking, and I always used to go out in my driveway and I broadcast the Lakers versus Celtics by myself, but I was all 10 players. I'd do it on my basketball court in high school, and while we were during a timeout joking around at practice after we ran blood and guts or sprints. So that's kind of how it started for me, and I was intrigued with it, the broadcast business, but I was going to go to dental school. And so I came home one year and I said, man, Dad, this broadcast thing's awesome. And yes, he's got a great broadcasting school. And he said, boy, let me tell you something. And he always used to tell me, because he's a blue-collar construction worker, he says, you don't want to do what I do. He said, you're going to make it with your brains, but you're going to make it with that right arm and your mouth. I took a step back my freshman year and said, you know what, make it with my mouth. Why not? And so I went into the journalism school, and I got my degree in broadcasting from there. But, JB, you know how it goes. Well, most of us spend time in a different career after our major. We graduate with one degree and do something else. So yep. Move forward, you know, about 15 years later, after a 10-year NFL career, it was June after my last year, and I didn't know if I wanted to play. And I got a call from Craig James, who had been doing with Herb Street. So, and, you know, he was Herb Street before Herb Street, and Craig had gone to CBS. And he called me up because I'd gone to his off-season broadcast school like 5 years before. And he said, what are you going to do? This was in June. After my last year, like in 96. And I said, no, I don't know what I'm going to do, dude. I may go back and play. I'm not sure. He goes, you want to broadcast? I said, yeah. So let me do a little work for you. And so I said, I don't have a tape or anything. I mean, I used to, while I was playing, I'd go and do every radio show or post-game TV show I could. But I get a call from, and I'm doing nothing, and, you know, take your kids to school. And he says, Sean Bo Davenport, you ought to hire Craig James, your agent. I mean, he said it that fast, and I laughed. I said, how you doing? He goes, do you want to do some sidelines for us? I said, sure. So I did two games, and I guess I did them pretty well. And at that meeting, Mike Tirico told me, you know, be informative and get it back to the play-by-play guy before the next play. And that was the only training I had other than school and being interviewed while I was doing that stuff. And the first game, they came down to me about 15 times. It was Syracuse, North Carolina State when McNabb was there. And then I did a second game, which was a Peyton Manning at Arkansas game in Little Rock. And then after that, they gave me a full schedule, and I was working Thursdays and Saturdays, my first season on the sidelines. And then that year is when I started, it was NFL Tonight, and they turned it to NFL Live a few years later. But after 6 months of college football, I auditioned for Sunday Countdown. They gave it to Jim Kelly, but they put me in Golic on NFL Live, which was NFL Tonight then. And 12 years later, that was 12 years of my career at ESPN doing Sports Center, and I got reps, but I had no clue. I just tried to do it right. And John Walsh told me, the first time I'd met him, he says, tell me something I don't know. And that was how my career started. And the only audition I ever had in my entire career doing sports broadcasting was the one for Sunday Countdown, which Jim Kelly got, and then they hired me for NFL Live. And that's exactly how it started, on a phone call by Craig James saying, what are you going to do?
Any space that you're in for 12 years, you're going to have some ups and downs. Let's start with the positives. When you reflect back now and you look at that time that you spent at ESPN, what do you value and cherish the most?
The greatest 12 years possibly in my life, and I mean that sincerely, and had 10 fun years and enjoyed my time as a professional football player. The friendships, I'll tell you one thing I learned is that the people behind the scenes are far more important than what we do. We get paid money to stand in front of a camera. And yeah, we prepare hard, and it is a hard job. I learned that as well, how much preparation goes into it if you want to be a guy that is thought of as a broadcaster first and a former football player second, not the other way around. And that was always my goal. But I'll tell you what I cherish the most is the same things I cherish the most in my career, not relationships. I mean, you think about who I got to learn from and work with, and I get emotional. Think about it. Stu Scott, God rest his soul. I learned the greatest thing about how to interview somebody from Dan Patrick and a guy like Mike Tirico, who if a camera went dead 30 seconds before a show, you would have never known if you were sitting in your living room at home. The relationships. But the most thing is the people behind the scenes. The cameraman who's making 30 grand a year. The PA who's running up and down hallways, busting his ass, sprinting to get you a shot sheet for a highlight from a Monday night game, who 23 years old and just graduated from Syracuse, who's scared to death, and they're busting butt. the 3 o'clock in the morning laughs on the set with on when SportsCenter was doing late night in Bristol, and me and Van Pelt and Carl Ravitch are sitting there laughing in between sets. The grind that you put on there, but the relationships, man. I don't have one thing after 12 years that I look back and say, man, Sean, you hated them, didn't you? Ever. You have your moments when, gosh, today's a long day, or, man, we disagreed on the content, what should have been on that day. But I can't remember meeting you and JB and seeing young guys like our friends that started out as assistant radio producers or running networks now. Those things.
Yeah.
And I'm being serious. It's not the paycheck. It's nice to get paid. But the laughs and the stupidity and the in-between stuff and those things, I don't remember what my first paycheck salary was like at ESPN. I remember the sidelines that gave me $1,000 a week, but I don't remember my third contract or my second contract unless I went back and looked. But I do remember sitting there and doing it with Fowler and Herb Street. We were going to do a show and interview Pete Carroll and the stupid laughs. I remember the in-between stuff when you and I'd work together. Those things in between commercials or doing game night. Some guys going, leaving are bitter. I'm going to tell you right now, when people ask me, would you go back? I said, hell yes, I'd go back. If you'd have told me I'd have had 12 years at ESPN when I was 25, I'd have said, I'll take it. So there's no regrets from here, from John Skipper and Norby Williamson and right on down the line. People make stupid mistakes on both sides. You have regrets. But my only regret is that for 8 seconds, I wish some stupid night you don't do something stupid with a cell phone. Other than that, my best friends in the world and memories – aside from high school and some of your teammates come from that building.
It's a special place, no question. And I remember you were pretty outspoken, and rightfully so, about how sometimes the network would elevate certain people based on what they did on the field rather than what they contributed on the television side of things. And in your case,
right,
you were against it. You know, Emmitt Smith was going to get profiled to the top while you're busting your tail, doing a great job on NFL Live and SportsCenter, and you didn't get the same run. But I bring that example up for one reason, because it's exactly what Tony Romo is going through right now. You've got a lot of people in the business who are going to be looking at CBS going, how is this guy in the number one chair when you have all these other talented people behind him? Now, as somebody who's seen it from both sides, when you heard about Romo taking the number one chair with Jim Nantz, what was your immediate feeling on it?
Got a lot of work to do, but God bless him, man. Everybody should get this chance. And I was not envious at all, JB. I was happy for him. I can remember Tony and I having a couple beers. We used to hang out a little bit. You know, I was in the prime of my television career, and, you know, he was big-eyed, wanted to know all about it. We were talking football. You know, he's struggling to stay on a team, and we'd had a bunch of laughs. And to see the transformation of that kid turn into a man and a hell of a football player, I'm really happy for him. Now, I would just tell him to tell me something I don't know, and you got to find the line between – talking under the expert and talking over the amateur. And not a lot of people know this, JB. I don't even know if you and I have talked about it. The one thing I always did, once I got there and sat in that chair at NFL Live and did it, started to know, because I've always been a Belichick and Parcells. I love the guys who grind and kind of piss the world off because they don't tell us in the broadcast world what we think we deserve to know, because he was protecting his team and protects his players and protects his organization. All he's about is winning. And people used to get so frustrated because Bill wouldn't give them information. My number one goal on TV every single day was, what would Belichick think about this show? And that's the honest to God truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't tell anybody that when I was playing, but I always thought to myself, if he's watching this show, what's Bill saying? And if I walked off a set saying, Bill watched and said, you know what, Sean? That I didn't talk under him to, like, this guy has no PCs, he's full of crap. That's not what we do on our defense. That's not what I was thinking this game plan. If I knew that Bill Belichick was watching this show and would have said, I either learned something or he's dead on, then I knew that I was doing right in that part of the profession. The other side was, if somebody sitting there, if my mother, who knows sports but didn't know the lingo, is sitting there in a chair by herself without somebody to explain, what would Sue say after the show? And if I could find a way to capture both, I knew I was doing the right thing. So, and it is a fine line to be an expert, but also to engage the person who doesn't know what cover two is, or two man, or three sky is. And that would be one. And the second thing I tell them, because it's TV, not radio, I always hear this and it drives me crazy. A 15-yard out, cutting the ball, lands 3 yards over the receiver's head, and somebody will tell me, Well, he missed it high. Don't tell me what happened. Tell me how it happened. And you better do it quickly, urgently, and with entertainment, because, as you know, JB, this isn't just X's and O's. You've got to learn, like Gruden, to entertain, and while it's a different primetime audience, you still got to be able to tell me what happened, tell me how it happened, but you better make me laugh at times, and you better also make me want to throw something at the screen because of your opinion. All those, and you got about 15 or 20 seconds to do it before Jim gets the playback. I tell players, as I train quarterbacks, I players all the time, if a defensive lineman misses a tackle, he's got a middle linebacker there to clean it up. As a quarterback, when you drop back and throw, God in the world are going to see it, brother. You don't have anybody to clean it up, so you got to be efficient. You got to be Brady-like. As a broadcaster, there ain't nobody to clean you up, brother. If he thought he was criticized as a quarterback, every media critic, when he turns on that mic in his first game, they're going to be on him like crazy. He's going to have to guard against that, oh, my gosh, I still wish I was playing. But I'm anxious to see what kind of enthusiasm. I learned this about comedians when I was working with Sandler on Longest Yard. He said, when the light switch went on, JB, that personality was flowing, my man. When the light switch went off and he was around his wife or his kids and us, he was just a normal guy. So people wonder, well, if that comedian's not that funny without the light switch on, is that how they always are? No. So Tony's kind of a low-key, laid-back guy who doesn't say much. I'm anxious to see, and I don't know, what personality is going to shine the second the light switch goes on. And that'll be a great challenge for him to be able to do what I was told, to not talk under the expert and to not talk over the amateur. And there's a fine line. You got to be pretty special to do that.
Well, the other part of that, you mentioned the media critics who are going to be listening to his every word. So is the locker room. You know, the first time he says something critical, they're going to take notice of it. And you've went through that. I was thinking back to when Terrell Owens missed the Hall of Fame vote this year. And I remember while you were on the air, you were pretty strongly critical. I remember at one point when you guys had to sit down, it was really explosive TV. He's now blaming the media for being left out of the Hall of Fame. And I was curious to get your take on that, because for T.O., when you think about the media, the ESPN profile on that guy, from the driveway sit-ups to the that's my quarterback, how much ESPN influenced our perception of T.O.? Does he have a point in what he's saying, or is he off base?
There's no doubt about it. Why do people think that some of the guys that are borderline Hall of Famers want to be on TV? They want to keep their name relevant.
Yep.
I get it. Now, some of us aren't that fortunate to have had a football career, baseball career that good. Now, I will tell you that, and you're right, T.O., and while I think he's an enormous player, I always an enormously talented, great player, and he does belong in the Hall of Fame. He does. We had some fun battles on SportsCenter and on radio because, you know, with the Sharpie and the rest of it, I always said, he doesn't need to tell us how good he is because we're going to spend all our time telling everybody how good he is, so let us take care of that. And I think it's the same now. With Terrell Owens, I do believe JB's put numbers up through the roof. But I've also interviewed Hall of Fame guys, voters, who said they don't like what his influence was on the team. And none of them seem to know the criteria. None of us do for a Hall of Fame voter. One thing I believe is he's got to understand, and we talk about always knowing the personnel on the field, he's got to recognize who the voters are.
Yep.
His peers don't vote. It's writers. It's guys who have been elected and broadcasters, and I get it, and they're very good at it. But a lot of them are old school. And to fight back in the media, I said if Terrell would just sit back and say nothing, I'd understand after an interview or two, you're frustrated and pissed and think you belong in. And there's only 300, a little bit over 300 dudes in the Hall of Fame. It's an exclusive group. He's going to get in. But the more he fights back with a battle he cannot win with the media, the longer some guy who's been voting for 35 years and it took Art Monk forever to get in is going to say, you know what, then you're going to wait another year, and then you're going to wait another year. So while he deserves to be in, and I understand his frustration from his point of view because he's a great talent, but his probably his biggest weakness on the field or in the locker room is exactly what he's doing now that's causing these guys not to vote for him. That's why. So if T.O. would just take one step back and say, you know what, let me go about this with the silent button on, the mute button on, just for a minute, and maybe encourage it. Say, you know what, there's great players in. I understand why this guy got in front. Even if he doesn't, to massage it, even if he doesn't want to. I don't mean kiss their rear end, but there's a lot of really worthy players, and he's going to get in. And I think the sooner he zips it and allows us to tell him how great he is, just like we would have in his career, the sooner he'll get in.
I want to put a bow on the ESPN chapter because although it's a special one, you've since moved on and had a pretty strong run in Houston. We're going to get into that in a second. But you brought up before the infamous cell phone prank, which you've certainly paid your penance on. And you've overcome it and you've moved forward. But how low did you get and how did you overcome it? Because while we see that you've moved on now, I mean, you had to go through some personal battles to get through that. That had to be a tough challenge for you, I'm sure.
Well, JB, you and I have been friends for a long time, not only as workers, but friends. Just you were there when I didn't have a pot to piss in when I went through this. I went from the top of the mountain to rock bottom, and rock bottom truly felt like quicksand, and then it became a trampoline. And how it happened was no major post other than good friends. And I don't know if I've ever told anybody this, but probably, let's see, I left ESPN in 08. The incident was in 06, and do I regret it? Yes. Was it a sophomore mistake? Yes. And do we make excuses while it's going on because I didn't know how to handle it early on and something stupid? Yes. 10 years later, maybe somebody wouldn't be making a big deal. All those things. They're well documented. And I felt awful. The three things I've still felt thought about every single day of my life are my kids, my dad, and that he's no longer with me, and that there's not a day that goes by that incident still it doesn't bother me. Even after I started this, when I started with Houston, I started doing this, I would sleep in my car about a night every 2 weeks to remind myself of what it was like to go to the ATM and have minus $300 in it. And there's times I still think about, and I'm going to pull into a parking lot, I'm going to sleep in my truck tonight, and I've been blessed more than I should be, just to remind myself I'm never going back to rock bottom over a stupid, sophomore, dumb decision. The problem was, JB, everybody else let it go. I didn't. And I beat myself up so bad. And no, the punishment didn't fit the crime. I didn't beat anybody. I didn't kill anybody. I don't get arrested. But you know what? I'm one of those guys that wears my emotion on my sleeve and it was stupid. That being said, how I overcome it, how I overcame it, should I say, a lot of great friends, a ton of prayer, tired of being at rock bottom, realizing I didn't lose my skill set, and guys like you and friends and family telling me that, and to realize if I just stayed the course and did right, this wasn't going to be my defining moment. A stupid 10-second mistake was not going to define the rest of my life. While I had let it for, hell, JB, from 2008 to 2012, I was one of those guys that became reclusive. Other than my kids, I lost relationships because I didn't return calls. I did nothing. And I'm not a big drinker. I don't do drugs. I don't do that. But I just sat in a hotel room and felt sorry for myself. And for about 3 or 4 days, you know, you'd have a little bit of tequila and scotch, you know, and some Jack Daniels. And I woke up on New Year's Day and said, this isn't happening anymore. This is not me. I don't even like this stuff. And I finally got poor friends of mine said, you're an idiot. And Junior Seau, God rest his soul, came up and he pecked me on the lips. He said, I need to see more of you before he died. And then fortunately, with some great people around, I said, this is not going to define me, as I had mentioned earlier. So it was no one defining moment. It was a bunch of defining moments. But the truth of the matter is I got tired of being at rock bottom. I got tired of feeling sorry for myself. I got tired of feeling useless. And it wasn't like me. You know, I wasn't afraid of much in my life. And when I was going through that, I disappeared. And your mind races. And you say, man, am I ever going to get this back? And I realized, one, I'm never taking this career for granted again. And two is that a lot of times comebacks are better than the original. And the original for me was pretty damn good for a guy who didn't deserve all the blessings he got. And I wanted to make my dad proud when, you know, he said, you make sure you take care of your family when he died. And he didn't mean financially, he just meant you do the same things that I do. And I realized that as a dad of three and how much I love my kids, that it's good for my kids to see somebody go through adversity and know how to overcome it. And that was good. But it's also good for them to realize that their dad is not going to sit back and, you know, and let this happen anymore. And fortunately, the timing was right for me to come back. And here we are. I've been with David Gow now and ESPN Radio and it was Yahoo and now SB Nation for 3 years. And now we got this great opportunity that we started a couple days ago on TV. And I feel more blessed now than I did when I first started this because comebacks make you feel pretty good, brother. So it's been fun.
Well, speaking of that comeback story, I mean, you mentioned the ESPN Houston opportunity, the SB Nation opportunity, being sports now with the TV simulcast. How did the situation with Gow even come about?
My agent had talked to, you know, Craig Larson, who you've known for a long time, and Chris Morales. And there was a time earlier when they were doing Sporting News Radio where I had interviewed with them while I was going through the difficult transition after my stupidity and trying to get back into it, and it never materialized. And then my agent had talked, and so the timing was right with their Yahoo Sports and the local side, 1560 AM, and I came and met with him at a restaurant, and I'll tell you, and you know this, Dave, he's as fine a man as I've ever met in the business, because he doesn't meddle with the people on air. He lets you do your job, but he's such a great family man. He's extremely bright, and he realized he doesn't know what he doesn't know, because he was not a radio guy. You know, he's a Harvard guy and a businessman, and he knows all that stuff, and he hired good radio people around him to help build it. So I sat down with him at lunch one day, and, you know, you're initially worried the situation with me at ESPN had been years earlier, and he sat down and we talked about that for just a few minutes. He goes, I don't care about that, because I talked to enough people to know what kind of character you are, the way you treated your coworkers. And that's another thing I was always proud of, is I always felt like the people I worked with, whether you were a production assistant or a talent, I always treated you the same, and I cared about people. And he had done his research, which a good businessman does, and he said, I don't care about that. Let's talk about us and what you bring to the table. And that's how it started. And we sat for about an hour and a half. A few days later, he had hired me. And then I went home and got stuff and came in, and I was originally going to do it because I was living in Dallas, do the show from Dallas from a studio. And I came in and did the first week there, and he goes, Sean, I like the morale you bring to the building. He said, you bring the people are excited and happy, and I need your leadership, quote unquote, the hallways, is what he said. And I was honored. So I moved to Houston, and that's how it started. I was doing the couple hours, then they moved me to with Granato to do the afternoon drive show. And then they moved Granato, my partner, to local, John Granato, and then they moved me to 97.5 to ESPN from 11 to 1 Central, and it's been going great. And then when I did the Yahoo afternoon show, I said, you know, bring Steve Buenin in for an interview. He was doing Comcast Sports here locally in Houston, former cohort of mine and yours at ESPN, and then bam, they hired him, and then he went and got a Seattle job, and in the process of Yahoo switching to SB Nation, then BN Sports jumped in and wanted a radio show on their TV network because they're growing so fast and so furious, and they chose our show, and then I was able to go through a bunch of auditions with people to get my team together with Adam Sager, the producer, and Brian Barrett, a young, extremely bright, hardworking talent that deserved a chance that I'd had my eye on while I was there for about 2.5 years. Because all he did was grind and work, and he'll be great. And then Robin Carlin, who'd come in and brings a different skill set and talent. So we put together a team after a long process, and here we are, man. And so that's how it started. But I was fortunate that David Gal was a guy who, he was a second chance giver. And he said, I've seen far worse. This is silly. And after I'd gone through it, and he had told me, you don't need to beat yourself up over this anymore. I get it. And he's the one who ended the conversation when it came to that. He didn't want to even talk about it anymore. And that's how it started. And I promised myself I was going to do what I'd always did. Be passionate, be opinionated, and prepare my ass off. Those are the things I could control. I couldn't control the rest. And fortunately, this part of this comeback has been great. And you keep climbing the ladder. And for me, it's never going to end. I'm just going to keep pushing and pushing and treat it as if I'm a rookie in the business. Timing's everything, and the timing's been great here, and I'm blessed.
Speaking of timing, it almost took a detour for you. You almost joined me in the Bay Area back in 2015.
Yes, I did.
You chose at that time to stay put, and I'm sure the loyalty to Gal had to play a role in that situation. Was that ultimately what influenced you to stay put in Houston?
Only reason. And as you well know, we had talked, and you know, you and I were close. The negotiations came to the 11th hour, and all the opportunities TV-wise in San Francisco, a chance to work with you at a great station there in San Francisco. The first hard decision I had to make was to go back to when Denny Green had gone to coach at Arizona, and I was at ESPN, and he offered me the quarterback coach job, and I went there and had an office, and I turned it down because things were going so well at ESPN. That was a hard decision because I loved Denny from my past as him being my head coach. And the next hardest one for me, JB, was that one, to say San Francisco, great sports town, a guy I know and trust, meaning you. And you know why I turned it down is because the guy, and although you and I had talked throughout all my stuff that had gone on when things weren't going well, David gave me that first chance back, and I said, you know what, I'll take less to stay. It was hard.
Two aspects of your background that I don't know that many people out there know. I mean, they hear you on the air. They know what you bring through the speakers, but they don't realize, first of all, how hard you work. I mean, you're on the air 6 hours a day. On top of that, You're also extremely well-rounded. That's one thing you mentioned earlier in the conversation about how you grew up loving baseball and basketball, and you haven't had that mentality of, I'm a football analyst who also talks about other things. Your approach has been, no, I'm a well-rounded talk show host. And I think that's certainly benefited you along the way. I want to talk to you, though, about the process, because you're working on a local show and on a network show, a two-hour midday show, a four-hour afternoon show. What's your process each day to make sure you're engaged with each show unit and able to do good work on the air? Because that's a lot of time that you have to invest each day into being successful in two different places.
Well, JV, I'll tell you, and thank you. One of the best compliments I've ever received was from Mike Greenberg. He always said the best guy outside of his sport, of any other sports, was me. And I don't mean that arrogant. It was good to me because we talk baseball, basketball, and still do it. They're still my favorite sports more than football. I didn't want to be the guy who said, so why is he talking boxing or golf or hockey, all those things. I wanted to be the guy that, oh my gosh, is he a baseball analyst or how does he know basketball? I never wanted to be the jock turned broadcaster. I wanted to be different. And when a Mike Greenberg says he knows all other sports as well as he knows his own, that meant a lot to me, and it's kind of sustained me because, hey, I could BS anybody with football. I know football, talk and watching it, but there's too many smart people out there now. You just can't BS them. And you know me with my energy. When I got 6 hours, I asked David Gow for 8.
Yep.
I wanted to do more work. So the energy and the passion, the preparation are never going to be the reason or a stupid mistake that I'm not on radio or television. So I'm not going to be outworked, and I'm sure as heck not going to be out passionate or out opinionated on the air. That being said, my process is, and I don't want to say it's a simple one because I also train a lot of quarterbacks and go to camps and have a pretty good business there, but this is what I do. I watch everything. I'm up early. I'm not a sleeper. I'm about a 4 hour to 5 hour night guy max. So I'm up late watching West Coast Giants Dodger baseball on my packs, and I'm up early. If I miss something that happened overnight, I'm up. I read everything. To be able to balance the ones local, ones national. Even on the local, you add a little national flavor because the divisions the teams are in. But I prepare. I'm up early reading, watching, talking, studying. And then if it's, I know I'm going to talk to a coach or somebody that day, I'll call and say, what's going on with the draft or a guy? And then between shows, I'm spending those 2 hours getting our show ready and preparing that. Now with the TV thing, it's a different dynamic because the day before, we got to start talking about it so we can get B-roll up and do all those things. So it falls right into what I do, JB. It's not foreign to me because this is how I live my football life, and this is definitely how I live my broadcast life. I don't claim to know it all, but I'll damn well tell you I've read most of it. Some guys have been blessed with great looks. Some guys have been blessed with great speed or height or whatever it is. I was blessed with a damn near photographic memory. So when I read it and I see it, I don't need to write it because I got it. And I write things down in my mind, but that's why, JB, but it's the ability to retain information. My preparation, I can control that. My passion, I can control that. My attitude, I can control that. I can't control what my co-hosts say. I can't control what happens when Sergio Garcia misses a putt, but I can sure give you an opinion on it. As Chuck Knox told me my rookie year and told us all, proper preparation prevents piss poor performance. So my 6 P's. But I don't ever let, and Jim McMahon taught me something different than that, JB. When we were playing, Mac did not study a lot of film away from football. And I said, Mac, you going to study that? He goes, no. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, my philosophy is if you go home and study it all the time after you watch it, the complex. He goes, I don't want to get locked into thinking just because it looks like that on film that that's the way they're going to play every single snap. So he was a guy that was a reactor and be able to spur the moment. And he was Mac and Peyton Manning, completely different dudes when it came to that. So I've learned both the ability to just, boom, I got an opinion. It doesn't have to be validated by none. It's my opinion on this guy. But I've also learned that there would be nothing more humiliating than somebody saying, dude, you're a joke. And I will never let that happen because I want to make sure the people at home know, and I'm not going to be outworked when it comes to that.
I want to touch on your afternoon show because if someone's not familiar with it, it's now on BN Sports. They get a chance to watch it. Or if they move to Houston or have an affiliation in their local market and get a chance to hear it. With Robin Carlin added, Brian Barrett added, and yourself now driving the show, for those who might not know it, what exactly is the Sean Salisbury Show? What are they going to get on a daily basis?
You're going to get moments, and I hope there's a lot of them. JB, I think you and I have probably talked about this many times. When you pull into your driveway, if you're listening on radio, that your wife or your husband or whoever it is, or your girlfriend or your boys, whoever's preparing dinner, you may be about 10 minutes late because you've got to hear that segment.
Right.
Whether you're laughing your ass off, belly gut laughing, crying, you cannot miss that interview with Charles Barkley. You cannot miss what I'm about to say about LeVar Ball, that you got to hear it because you don't want to wait to listen on the podcast. I hope that that's the case, and I think it will be because we have three different personalities. If it's just talking about guy talk or talking about National Beer Day, that we make it intriguing enough, we say, man, that was funny as hell. I believe you got to make them want to throw something at the radio, that they also want to laugh to where they don't want to miss it and they want to call their friends. So the way it's the driveway approach where that you're in your driveway, you can't turn the radio off. And same with your computer at work that your boss walks by, you got your earpiece in and you're streaming it and you're laughing and he wonders what you're laughing about. That's my goal. I'm on TV too. You know, hopefully we'll look the part, but the opinion will be strong. I can promise you that. That'll never be lacking. The information will be accurate and the battles will be epic. And the battles meaning it's not one of those where everybody always agrees. We'll tee up people's strengths and at times we'll tee up people's weakness. So you see the vulnerability in it. Dan Patrick, I think, is the greatest sports interviewer on the planet. And the interviews will be crisp and fast and furious, and we'll get information out of them. You won't hear a lot of us hosts talking when the interviewer is on. Those are the things that Brian is an extremely informative numbers guy who's so well prepared. Robin has got thick skin and can deal with us two clowns and anybody else. And she's very, very, she brings an opinion. Our producer, Adam Sager, who will also have a voice. You know, a lot of what Dan's stuff does, and I've always said this, a CEO or a quarterback or radios, why wouldn't I pattern something after the best in the world at what they do?
Yeah.
The Colin Cowherd cleverness. There's a segment that'll be Ask Sean. I also have one segment that'll be on every day, 4:45 every day. That's Central, 5:45 in East, JB, where it's the Wrath of Sean. We will try to make it where we involve people and in-studio guests when they happen and they're in town, all those things. So I want to take something from the best. I'm not afraid to admit that I want to interview like Dan does, but you will get all that and you will get, we want to make it to the point where that new show, boy, we got to tune in. You don't want to miss these 2 hours daily. Heck, I know there's other things to do. I'm not arrogant enough to think that the Gottliebs and the Cowards and those guys aren't great and going to get there. They should. But I also want them, when people start to talk, as this thing grows, say, did you hear what they had? Did you hear what they said? It's not going to be boring sports. I don't do that. Me tee you up, you tee me up. It's going to be interactive, but it's also going to be, we're going to get after it, man, and we're going to do it so people want to watch, and it's appointment radio and TV.
I'm going to hit you with a couple of quick hits in a moment to wrap things up, but I do want to ask you one final question because it's an area you're pretty outspoken on social media, but yet it's one of these topics on air that some love to introduce to their content and some don't, and that's politics. Now, the world certainly changed, especially over the last few years, but it's become an issue where in the past it was always stick to sports, don't ever bring it up, and now you hear shows across the country bringing it into their content focus on a daily basis. When it comes to the on-air show, what's your philosophy on including political conversation in the sports talk world?
I want it to be a sports and entertainment radio show. But also, if Rory McIlroy is playing golf with President Trump and the rest of the world's talking about it, why wouldn't we?
Right.
Yeah, because we're going to bring what the best pizza place in Chicago is into the radio show. You can't be afraid of the criticism for bringing it up. Now, if I ever let political correctness dominate my show and say, well, you can't. No, but a sports figure, Tom Brady, is talking to Donald Trump. Now, I can give you my opinion on that right now, saying, why do we care? The others are, why do we care why Rory McIlroy plays golf with President Trump? Hell, if Trump called tomorrow, I'd play golf with him. Bill Clinton called tomorrow, I'd play golf. Hell, who doesn't want to play golf with the president? Some nice course. That I don't care about. If we're talking about it, I'm not backing down from it. I'm not afraid of the religion subject. I'm not afraid of why people, you know, we'll have some laughs and we'll have some serious conversation during Lent. My partner's a Catholic, and when Lent's on, man, he gives up booze. And so it makes for a funny one, but it also makes for a sometimes serious one. This really matters to people. So I'm not shying away from it. I may ask the question, why the hell do we care? But I am going to talk about it. To me, it's pussy radio if you all of a sudden decide that you're only going to talk about the stuff that protects you. Screw that. I'm going to be prepared enough to give a well-thought-out. It's not going to be popular with everybody. Hell, the president gets elected by 51% to 49% of the vote. So 49% of America can't stand his ass. And the people who can't stand me, if I'm doing it right, are still going to tune in and listen because they want to know what I have to say. It's not the lovers that keep the show going. It's probably the people who don't love you that keep tuning in. If you're afraid to talk about it or if you're afraid of criticism, then I suggest you take 2 weeks off and quit your job because you'll never make it.
All right, I want to wrap up on a couple of quick hits. Just give me the first thought that pops to your mind to each of these questions, okay?
You got it.
A letter grade for Sean Salisbury's performance in the movie Benchwarmers would be?
B+. Some of my friends say, Sean, you're way too good at that angry gay man role. So I guess they had some thought I didn't have to act. But a B+ performance, especially since it was so early in my career.
One word to describe your on-air relationship and chemistry with John Clayton.
Special.
The current state of ESPN is?
Interesting.
And then the final one, piece of advice for athletes who are transitioning from the field to the radio studio.
More preparation than you put in as a player.
Great stuff, my man. I'm proud of you. Excited for what you've got brewing in Houston and now on television with BN Sports. And keep it up, my man.
I appreciate it. I love you, man. I appreciate your insight. Thanks for having me on.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Whether you've been a fan of Sean's or not, the one thing I admire about the guy is that he's open about his experience. Many in our industry have continued to bring up the subject of his infamous cell phone prank gone wrong at ESPN. And although that's going to be attached to him permanently, and he understands that, I'm a believer in moving forward and judging people on how they respond to adversity. It's easy to throw stones at people in glass houses, but we all have skeletons in our closets. If our darkest secrets ever got out and became the focus of how we were remembered for the remainder of our careers, that'd be a tough pill to swallow for many of us. One thing I do know about Sean, he's tremendously talented and he works his tail off. I don't know many former athletes who are as well-rounded and want to be on the air 6 to 7 hours a day doing sports talk radio. This guy loves the business and he's very good at it. The other thing I'll give him credit for is that he's kept his nose clean the past 5 years in Houston, and he seems to be in a much better state of mind than he was following his demise from ESPN. Most of us would give an arm, leg, or both to have a 12-year run at ESPN. Sean had that. Although it ended in turmoil and public humiliation, the experiences he had there can never be taken away. I don't know about you guys, but I'd much rather have surfed the greatest wave and crashed into the bottom of the ocean than never have entered the water to experience it. But hey, that's just me. Well, that's going to bring our 10th episode to a close. I want to thank Sean Salisbury for stopping by, as well as each and every one of you who've taken the time to listen, subscribe, leave a review, and share our podcast content on social media platforms. I really do appreciate it. A reminder, if you're running a radio station or you're a talent looking to help elevate your performance to generate further interest in what you do, I am available for consulting opportunities. My contact information is available on the website, sportsradiopd.com. Also, I do make appearances on talk shows as a sports media analyst. If a sports media story or business issue comes up, I'm on Twitter at sportsradiopd and on email, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. In the words of Kid Rock, if it looks good, you'll see it. If it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it's marketed right, you'll buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it. So be authentic in everything you do. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for dropping by.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.